Podcast meeting brilliant minds and looking at the world around them. How do they 360 themselves and 360 the world? Jamie Neal, the host, asks many questions about their mindset and how they fundamentally operate their world and the world around them. Hello and welcome back to 360 Yourself. I hope you're having a pleasant morning, afternoon or evening. I don't know wherever you are in the world. It might be Paris, it might be London, it might even be Australia, that far away. I hope you're having a good time at this moment because, again, we're still in lockdown. I'm here in Devon, which is in the UK, near London, about 4 or 5 hours. And yeah, we're still in our third lockdown. I mean, there's not much you can do apart from walks and working. And this kind of brings me to my point that I've been talking to a lot of people about, and it's the idea of balance, because we're working, if you are working your normal hours, 9 to 5, and then suddenly you're in your office or your space that you're working in, and then you finish and then you go into the kitchen, then you're technically in the same space that you're working. And sometimes it can be very difficult to understand what is the difference between work and personal when you're in the same space in the lockdown. And sometimes you'll just keep going till 7, 8, 9 o'clock because your computer is right by where you sleep, maybe. And it's just a really, really important for your mental health to make sure you separate and to give yourself good breaks, because I think you can burn yourself up because you'll just be like, well, I can just do the extra hour. And then suddenly it turns into another hour. And then suddenly it turns into another hour. And suddenly you've done an extra 3 hours when really you should have locked off and turned your computer off to really give yourself that moment just to breathe. And also making sure that you go for your walks and you go to the beach if you've got the beach near you or fields, because it's really, really important to make sure that you get your exercise and to see the world around you. Because, I mean, it is lockdown and we need to be safe and we need to be wearing our masks, but also you need to be getting out of your house and going for your walk, whether it's 10, 15 minutes per day, half an hour, an hour. So moving swiftly on, I've got another amazing guest for you today. He's based in Los Angeles at this moment in time, and he's a photographer and director, and he's worked with amazing artists like Jason Derulo, Zara Larsson, Tyra Banks. I mean, the list goes on. I really can't wait to introduce him to here on the 360 Yourself. So I want to introduce Tom. How are you doing, Tom?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Very, very well, thank you. So how is LA doing at this moment in time? Because we were talking just beforehand that I was saying I've heard LA's in a sort of similar situation to us in the UK with a national lockdown. How are you feeling?
I mean, the whole year has been kind of wild. I mean, between all of the movements, Black Lives Matter movement, COVID, Donald Trump just being voted out. So I feel like there's kind of a mixed energy, and I guess it's everybody's kind of got their own individual story, depending on who you talk to. But like, for me, I feel like there's an air of optimism because the vaccines are coming and we just got to kind of keep riding this storm until we get through it.
Yeah, I know. And also you had last week of the country sort of going in a bit of a meltdown with Donald Trump supporters going to, what was it called, the Capitol, wasn't it? And they were just like doing those riots, which was absolutely crazy to see from other different countries. And also I read on the news that they are moving all the kind of military forces into Washington because of next week, Biden takes over on the 20th. Is that correct?
I believe so. I mean, I feel like it was kind of, you know, the demise, the finish point of Donald Trump kind of feels like a toddler throwing its final tantrum.
Yeah.
And you kind of, on one hand, it's kind of deathly serious what happened in Capitol Hill. But on the other hand, I kind of know that it's not energetically helpful to play into all of that super dark stuff And so I try to look at it all with an air of optimism that like change is coming, you know, real change is coming. And thank God that it happened, because it was looking very, very close there. And it's really embedded a feeling of division between the American people. And it's kind of strange as an Australian to be watching from the outside in, kind of you're inside of it, but you're also outside of it as well.
Mm. Have you ever spoken to a Trump follower? I've never really spoken to one. I don't personally know anyone who is following Trump.
Yes, actually. Oh, wow. I do know somebody who is a fan of Trump. Somebody close to me, and we kind of had to have a healthy banter about it, because when he'd send me pictures of himself wearing Make America Great Again caps, I knew that part of it was also to try and, in a way, I think that people who support him are attracted to the kind of like outsider bravado of it. So rather than, you know, getting upset, I have to kind of try and find a bridge between how that person sees that person and then kind of find the humor behind it. So for me, I just sent back a picture of a cap that said Make America Gay Again. And just, you know, you find like I find to try and build that bridge through comedy rather than trying to kind of fight people about it, because I don't know if that's going to get you anywhere, because ultimately everybody sees the world in, you know, in a different way.
Yeah. I mean, you have the extremists as well with in Afghanistan and stuff, and then you have obviously had the other side of religion, and so there's always going to be two different viewpoints, isn't there? I mean, you have the left and you have the right from the US.
Right, and I mean, it sounds pretty terrible, but I like love getting my kind of updates on politics via that television show, The View.
Oh yes.
And I always think of like the Meghan McCain does a pretty amazing job being a conservative on that show, because she really helps you to understand the mindset of how other people, you know, the Republican Party see things. Yes. Not that she's pro Donald Trump or anything, but
yeah.
I surprise, surprise, I like listening to some intelligent ladies all talk it out.
Yeah. And so am I correct that you're originally from Australia then?
Yes, I am. I'm from a city called the Gold Coast, which was in Queensland. So it's known for its meter maids and surfing. I'm not sure if the meter maids still exist, but it was very much I grew up in a beautiful place called Paradise Point. Kind of slightly, I guess I would call it quiet. And just lots of like roller skating and church.
Oh, wow, they love church.
Yeah, I come from a big Catholic family, so youngest of eight kids. So I've got very specific memories of growing up outside of obviously school, I think I was an altar boy. And then after church, I'd go roller skating at a rink called Skaters Paradise. And I think part of the reason I used to love going is because they'd always play the pop hits. And so I kind of knew all of the music instinctively. So I just loved being by myself, going round and round the rink, kind of familiarizing and listening to all of my favorite songs.
Wow. And so my family have traveled extensively throughout Australia. Unfortunately, I haven't, and I wish I could. I mean, they've gone to Adelaide, Sydney and stuff. I mean, I even know that some people even eat kangaroo, which I find very crazy, because that is your national animal, isn't it?
Correct. I mean, the funny thing is like I've probably had kangaroo a few times, but it's more like at some kind of hip restaurant where they're preparing it in some sort of amazing dish. But I can tell you now, it's not, you can't go to the supermarket and just get a slice of kangaroo. It's definitely a lot more specific. Sorry if I'm shattering anybody's fantasies about what Australians like to eat.
Who made it like a law that you could eat kangaroo? Because obviously you can't eat swans here, because obviously it's our queen's animal. So I'm like, why? I don't understand why you can eat kangaroo.
Well, unfortunately, I haven't done a deep dive into the origin points of it as a gourmet cuisine.
I must do it after this conversation. I must do it because I've always been fascinated. Because I've got lots of Australian friends, and they've all tried like kangaroo, and I'm like, I don't understand that. Don't get it.
I mean, I can't even remember what it tastes like. I mean, I feel like it's chewier than normal, but honestly,
is that chicken?
I don't think it's good as chicken. I mean, it's kind of funny, isn't it? I mean, it seems to be the way that we love to do things is just to try and find any animal and see if it's edible, isn't it?
Yeah, any animal that goes, does this taste like chicken? Yeah, it does. Okay, that's great. So how did you get into the photography and directing world from Australia? Did you move over to London? Did you go straight to LA? How did it all happen?
Well, I did a film degree at a university in Brisbane. So I went to high school and university in Brisbane, which is kind of the biggest city next to the Gold Coast. Mm-hmm. But by that stage, I kind of was loving kind of being a party kid because I'd kind of gotten out of high school, which, you know, for me had felt very, I'm trying to find the right word. Suffocating seems too intense a word, but just kind of, I always in high school had a deep sense that things were going to be a lot more interesting once I got out of this place. And
I think a lot of people feel like that though, when they're in high school, because it's a very one way looking at things. And obviously when you're in that sort of high school, unless you go to high school, it's very international. It can be just a very like small focus, isn't it?
Well, it's kind of interesting. I mean, I went to a great high school in some aspects, but it's interesting because, you know, I think my mind kind of got a lot more expanded once I'd left there. And then kind of, I feel like my career has definitely been one of like continuing to open up possibilities and continuing to think like what is actually possible. And so when I went to film school and then I was kind of going out a lot and kind of meeting a lot of fabulous characters and, you know, models and photographers. And I wasn't a photographer at that stage. I kind of was specializing more in like writing and directing or studying it.
Yeah, because I read you were initially freelance as a stylist and set designer after graduating from film school.
Yeah, and, you know, it was basically come up with ideas and, you know, pitch it to different magazines. And it was literally like, I mean, it's kind of embarrassing looking back at it now. I remember when I was getting started writing some like 2-page letter to Oyster magazine asking how someone gets published, and surprise, surprise, no response at all.
You've got to ask those questions, because if not, if you don't ask, how are you going to know?
Yeah, it's definitely felt very trial by error. And you know, I kind of figured out pretty quickly that if you photographed a personality, that your shoot was far more likely to get published. And then so I kind of had a fashion column for this mag called SX. And through that, we'd kind of do these little shoots and I'd choose the photographer and we'd make the set and I'd style the clothes and write the article. And it kind of, I guess it just kind of kept snowballing from there. And if I was to pick a moment that kind of was a turning point, I'd done a really fantastic interview with an artist called Anthony and the Johnsons and this magazine called Black loved the story and picked it up and didn't change the interview, kept the whole thing, which was quite amazing. And I went and interned at the magazine, and kind of that was where I saw a lot of other really amazing kind of photographers, like Derek Henderson and David Shields and Russ Flatt, and kind of understood how it worked, and a kind of like an invisible veil was lifted. And so I just decided to start taking the photos myself, because I was like, well, I keep working with these other photographers and I feel like the photos could be better. But I was afraid need to kind of make that leap because who am I? You never went to photography school. And then weirdly had seen a psychic who in the reading had said to me, you already know you're a photographer. So why are you pretending you're not? And I remember being like very impressed in buying a camera. And then that's kind of how it began. And really, I mean, at the time I found it quite laborious, but like testing, you know, I did so much testing in the early days. And I think it's amazing training for making people look beautiful in an entire variety of scenarios. And
you can tell within your work, it's very narrative as well. It's very bright. And the outfits, you can tell you have an eye for styling as well, because everything matches in terms of coloring.
Yeah, I'm kind of, I try to find like a healthy balance. And I try to choose collaborators who kind of take my idea, but then kind of put a twist on it or a spin on it or kind of reinterpret it. But everybody knows that I'm pretty picky about the details. You know, I think it's just because then weirdly something just feels right or it looks right.
Yeah.
When the elements are match.
Because you obviously must get like a kind of gut instinct going, this actually is definitely where I need to go in terms of the ideas and the concepts that I've been developing, but also with collaborators. But have you ever had offerings and collaborations that have kind of gone away from your kind of stylistic choices that you know and that you stick to?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I used to love working with... for this magazine called Tangent, because the fashion editors there would kind of take what I did and then kind of push me in different directions. And I often really like the results. And so for me, I'm willing to be guided in different directions if I feel like I'm learning or I'm expanding or the, you know, there's a kind of an instinctual trust level that where we'll land on the other side is going to be something interesting. And I think, you know, I'm 36 now, and so I kind of understand the concept that you have to kind of keep evolving and you kind of can't just shut out everybody else's perspective or the way that other people see things. You kind of have to constantly kind of re-engage. And so I guess for me, it's always a bit of a tango between how do I perceive this versus allowing that kind of creative energy, be it from that artist or that stylist or that art director or whoever's coming in, to kind of come in and kind of change the landscape. And there's some pretty, you know, amazing results from that too.
And so when you're not thinking about your next job or concepts, how do you shut your mind off, or does your mind never shut off?
I mean, yeah, that's a tough one, isn't it? I too am one of those people that really struggles to close everything down. I mean, I've tried. I like to think that my version of meditation is I love to go for long walks and then like listen to an album and kind of, in a way, listening to somebody else's narrative and sonic landscape enables me to not think about any of my stuff and just get completely swept away for that whatever period it is, an hour and a half. And then in a way I can kind of focus more. But sometimes also I just need to go, like, you know, I'm very addicted to my headphones and my music, but sometimes I literally have to put it down. I'm like, you need to just kind of exist in life as it is with all of the real sounds. You kind of can't escape into a dream bubble of whatever the music is listening to. I feel like it'll be healthy for you to just actually be present in everything today.
Yeah, because there's a lot of theories of how music can sometimes be a hindrance in terms of your mental health, because of course everyone says music is something that lives within our soul and it's great to have music, but sometimes you just need to listen to what's around you and also listen to yourself, because you can be so influenced in two different directions depending on the music that you choose.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's definitely true. Like if I'm having to create a treatment or there's something that where I need to sit down and really concentrate, it has to be classical music, or my other go-to is like Enya or something where you won't be distracted, because suddenly I listen to lyrics quite intensely. So if there's a lot of lyrics happening, then all of a sudden I'm pulled out of whatever task I'm doing and I'm listening to what that story is. That's so I have to keep it neutral.
I'm still like that as well. When I'm traveling to my work, if I'm in the car, I have to have listened to classical music. But if I'm working somewhere, I can't have lyrics. I have Hans Zimmer or some of this all, Interstellar or something. This has has no influence. It's kind of like just neutral background. Because again, I get lost in sort of the energy and stuff. And then I get out my head as well.
Totally. And it's hard to sometimes you got to concentrate. Like today I have to finish another music video treatment and make sure it's all done by tomorrow for sign off on Monday. It's Saturday here in Los Angeles. So it's kind of like, it's hard, but I have to kind of not have any distractions around me and just smash it out, because I very easily get distracted by social media, television, music, my friends.
Also,
they're all welcome distractions too.
But also in LA as well, where there's so much kind of to do there as well. You've got hiking, you've got Santa Monica Beach as well. I mean, if I was living in LA, I would constantly be at the beach.
Right. Well, I'm very lucky. I live in an area called Los Feliz, so I'm right at the bottom of Griffith Park. I'm pretty much at Griffith Park, probably, I would say, 4 days a week. Training. So it's good for my mental. That was part of my mental health is I go and train for three times a week so that I can, keep my body really physical whilst I'm, it's funny, isn't it? You're either on set kind of doing a lot of stuff and physical activity, or the complete opposite of sitting in a chair, hunched over, images or visuals.
I can imagine that most people in LA work out though and go for walks and go for hikes as well. I mean, because it's such a sort of superficial place where a lot of it is on your looks and what you do look like.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of intense. I mean, I definitely feel like since living in Los Angeles, a lot of energy got put into those areas, and that was kind of strange for me too. Good in some ways, bad for my headspace and others. I think good, in the sense of I used to be kind of so self-involved that I didn't really care about, dressing up, really nice for my clients or those kind of simple things. I'm very much a hippie at heart, and I had to learn how to kind of pull it together and look the part.
Yeah,
and that kind of stuff is important.
But you can merge that sort of hippie look with this sort of LA look, and you can kind of have the best of both rather than transform totally and not be yourself.
Yeah, exactly. And I've definitely had fun with it all, It's just the irony is on the health journey is that you kind of put in a lot of effort into your fitness, but then find yourself thinking a lot more about how you look than you ever did before you even started that journey. And it should be the other way around, if you get what I mean.
Yeah, it should be, it's what we keep saying on 360 or stuff. It all comes from your center first before you even go out into your space or universe. It starts with, do you feel fit? Do you feel great about yourself? And then you then go out into the world and do what you need to do and be inspired and inspire others around you. But it comes from yourself first.
Absolutely. I often tell people that, my experience of Los Angeles, I like to think of it as a metaphor of a town that's kind of built on a desert. And when you're in the desert, there's two things that can happen. You can either have a spiritual epiphany or you will just die. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so the whole thing is that, I've had some extraordinary moments here that were so way beyond what I thought was possible. And then I've just had some horrific things happen too. And you're just like, wow. But that's also kind of what's beautiful about it is its extremities and kind of, it was a conscious choice to move to Los Angeles rather than New York and be a part of something that was kind of changing and happening in this city.
Because
this city's definitely becoming cooler, but yeah.
But also with New York, it's just a faster version of London and the kind of biggest in the bigger cities. But what LA has compared to New York is that LA, you can have a quality life. You can go hiking, you can go to the beach, you can do all those different things. There's more sun, where in New York, it feels like it's just work, or you can go to the Hamptons.
Well, and it's very true. And I mean, for me, I think that one of the things that's really fun about Los Angeles is that if people like you and they kind of believe in you, they'll give you a go. Whereas New York is a lot more like, this is the establishment. These are the people we work with. And, you know, you can try and penetrate it, and it can be done, but it's just a lot more difficult because they're not that interested in brand new kind of ways of doing things. It's much more, can you evolve to the way that it has been done? So I think for me, even though at times I think that, you know, it's the quality of the work here can be questionable, there are some incredible artists out here. And, you know, to our point before, it's hilarious because sometimes you meet some of these people and not only are they like, you know, incredibly amazing artists, but then they're incredibly good looking. And then they also happen to be really nice people. And you're just like, are you serious, man? Yeah. Do you really get like, how does that work? You know?
Yeah. I think you've got to find out from everyone that I have spoken to, you just have to find your people. I think that's what it is in LA, like, because it's so spread out and there's so many different types of people. And most people who go to LA are in the creative sector. I mean, they always say that you can always find an actor. I mean, you can always find someone because always someone's writing a script, everyone in the cafe's writing their next film, whatever. And I think because I think there's so much kind of pressure potentially to always kind of seek out those opportunities and network and meet new people, that you really do have to find your kind of crew just to go, we're still normal people, even though we do our jobs.
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, I'm lucky. I've got a few like core people in my life and, you know, we're able to like download and debrief about all of the kind of crazy adventures that we all have in our various different positions. And it's a lot of, you know, I guess, you kind of, this town is very much, you know, people love to validate you based on who you've worked with or what they perceive you doing. And it's hard to kind of, you can't get too hooked into that because it's not really real. It's real in the sense of like, yes, you've done these things and, you know, that they're accomplishments to be celebrated. But at the end of the day, you kind of just have to go back to bed and how you feel about yourself and how your relationship with other people is the only thing that's really real. The kind of validation that you get from the external stuff, it's fun, but it can't be held on to, if that makes sense. It all kind of dissipates in the end.
Yeah, you kind of have to be a bit... wise and not street smart, is that the wrong word, but I remember when I first went over to LA to meet a friend of mine, and it was like 2014 2015, and I'm a big people person. I love to talk to new people. I'm really open. When I say something, I kind of mean it. I go, if someone says let's get coffee, I'm like, cool, we're getting coffee then, let's go and do it, right? And I'll go along with it. And I remember going to like a bar and I was meeting loads of different creative people. And I was talking about what I was doing and what I'm over for, just seeing some friends and stuff. And they were like, yeah. And I got like 15 different numbers from people. So yeah, let's go for coffee or let's keep in contact. And then I remember texting people for the rest of the week and no one responded. And I was like, oh, okay, this is LA. Okay, yeah, cool, I understand now.
Oh my gosh, it's so true. I mean, yeah. I had to learn that as well. I mean, I think there's a little bit of like everybody's kind of afraid of missing out on something. So everybody kind of wants to overcommit and then pick and choose their options from, you know, it's kind of like buying three dinners and then deciding only to eat one of them. You know, yeah. It's kind of, there is totally that energy to the city. And I mean,
But how do you then form really good relationships with people? Because we all know that the creative sector is all based on relationships, but if you're making superficial sort of like, I kind of know someone, I don't, because you hear about all these amazing successful people that have come up with people and they all kind of help each other up because they're so tight knit. But if you're never really having like a really good, strong commitment and relationship with people or a group, how is it that they can rise up? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think you just kind of have to like choose wisely. And for me, like if I find people that I like, then I will hold on to them, you know? And for me, when I'm talking about that kind of stuff, I guess in a sense I'm talking professionally, because, you know, you do end up becoming friends with a lot of the people that you work with professionally. But for me, I'm kind of, you know, I'm inspired by people who look at things differently to how I look at them. And then the second thing is like their attitude and their work ethic. And, you know, it sounds bad now that I'm saying it out loud, but in a way you kind of do formulate these friendships based on those working experiences. And then like, it's like a slow dance. You slowly decide to, invest a little bit more outside of the working world, and then, you know, and take it from there. Mm-hmm. And so, because it's very easy here to be so busy that you kind of, you know, you're in contact with a lot of people that you don't necessarily feel it. Like when I, you know, lived in Australia and stuff, the dynamics are different because you're not necessarily constantly in the throes of working from something or working towards something. That's also what's kind of scary about living here as well. It's like, I've been here for 4 years now and it feels like it just went like that.
Yeah, just like that, doesn't it?
You know, yeah. But it's you know, I would say, I feel like that's across the board too. Like even with a lot of the famous people that I've met, then it's not like they've got massive posses of people. It's really, you know, I think everybody chooses to kind of have a sacred few people that are close to them, and then, you know, and then figure it out from there, especially in this kind of world where, you know, people have millions of fans or followers or all that kind of stuff. But you know, I see what the other side of that looks like as well, which is at the end of the day, you kind of, it's a validation that kind of can't be held onto, you know. So the things that actually can derive like real meaning and those kind of real friendships that you have. And yeah, I remember my mother giving me kind of advice about you know, that I didn't have to like open my heart to everybody, you know, meaning to be protective over protective over yourself. And I think that that's okay too. You don't have to kind of be an absolute open book. And that has actually served me well in Los Angeles as well, because, you know, I make, you know, choices about who I feel safe with, you know, to tell them anything, you know. But that said, you know, I love most of the people that I work with. So I don't have a lingering sense that I, you know, am missing out on that side. Yeah. I think the only thing I think about is like, you know, I'd like to have some phase where I do the whole crazy backpacker in Europe thing, because I never did it.
Yeah, me neither. But so so you're very comfortable in LA. Do you see yourself there for a bit longer, or is this done for you now? You're staying in LA, or would you like to visit other countries and stuff and live there?
Yeah, I mean, I was literally saying to my best friend Javita that I'd love to, like, you know, live in Spain or something for a period in time. I mean, you know, I'm just picking Spain, but I think I'm kind of aware, you know, I'm at a stage where a lot of my wishes creatively have been granted, in terms of, you know, there's always more stuff that you want to do and more stuff you want to explore. But I kind of look back with nostalgia at a time where I didn't have a very kind of demanding list of, you know, expectations, and my life was a lot more about just wandering around, you know, seeing what was going to happen. And I think in a way I connect that with the idea of just like going somewhere and like not working at all. People always love to ask me if I travel with a camera, and I'm like, hell no. I'm like, I do not want, like, my camera for me now like represents work. You know, I was never that photographer that was like,
Yeah, I do have a diary section on my website that, you know, that has some snaps of, you know, my travels in New Zealand and Paris and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's funny because, you know, people don't care about any of my landscapes. Like, they've never cared. They just want super highly art-directed, crazy. Like, and the other thing I always joke about is, like, I'm like, oh, I wish I was one of those minimalist photographers where all I did was, like, work with natural light and a white wall. Because everything that I do is so effing complicated. Like, my producer was literally saying to me, like, 2 days ago, she was just laughing at me, and she goes, with you, there's just no such thing as a simple idea. It's just never, ever, ever simple.
It's probably the same thing for Tim Walker, though, and his producer. I mean, whoever they are must be like, go, okay, another concept. Okay, it's going to take a couple of weeks to probably get it all together because it's so precise and so detailed.
Yeah, it's kind of like, it's always intense. And, you know, for me as well, I'm quite harsh on myself. I definitely have a grade system where I feel like, oh yes, I really, that one was very good, or that one could have been better, you know. Mm-hmm. I think that you have to deliver, and you have to make sure, a very important part of this business is making sure that you hand the product in and that the product is good. And I know that my version of, like, what I think is excellent versus, even for me, some, you know, stuff that I'm like, oh, this could have been better. I know usually people still really like it, but, you know, in that classic artist phase, you're still always kind of carefully examining things, thinking, okay, well, next time I'm going to do that, and I'm going to change that element to that, because if I'd done it like that, that would have been a lot more amazing, but this is still good, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. I mean, we're always a perfectionist of your work, and even if it goes back down to the end of, if the client's happy, then I'm happy. But I mean, it's all about subjective, isn't it? The client might be really, really happy, and you might be like, well, it could be better. Or you might be really, really happy, and the client be like, oh, it could be a bit better. And it's always just down to opinions.
Exactly, exactly. And yeah, and then, you know, sometimes it's funny about which things people really connect with too. Mm. You know, that can surprise me. Sometimes I'll really love something and other people won't understand it, and like, or vice versa, something that I think is very simple that, you know, sometimes I'm just kind of creating from an intuitive space, not a, you know, intellectual space. And sometimes that work, which is very simple, is stuff that people really engage with too. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm okay. I'm like, if this is, you're like loving this, I'm, you know, I'm glad to be of service, but it's not exactly rocking my boat, but, you know.
I love that, rocking my boat. So what we do at the podcast, we do the last bit is we give back to our audience. And so what I'd love to know is, what kind of books or quotes or paintings that you have seen that has inspired you that you would probably give back to the audience to also be inspired?
I mean, that's a tough one for me to answer, just because, like, I feel like I draw so much inspiration from, like, music and film, but from such a, like, a variety of sources. Mm-hmm. And kind of lately have been really into, you know, as we were saying earlier, because I live in Los Angeles, really looking at a lot of different film and television shows now, because, you know, you inevitably meet people working on things. I mean, I'm trying to think of something super specific that would be a great present for the audience. I think, I mean, the last book that I read was Communion by Whitley Strieber. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's the right way to say it. Yeah. And that's all about the author Whitley, it's based on his experiences of being abducted by aliens.
Right.
And that's kind of a very interesting read, just because that is not only kind of the interesting tales of his kind of multiple abductions through his life, but also kind of what does that stream of consciousness mean if, like, humanity is not at the very center of it. Mm-hmm. And I think it's less about kind of, oh, whoa, you know, I had this crazy experience. There is that aspect to it, but he kind of really intellectually looks at everything in a much more philosophical, what does this mean for myself? What does this mean for the universe? What does it mean for my understanding of myself? Mm. And I love kind of being taken on Black people's journeys in that sense. And then I think, you know, with all of that kind of stuff, I guess my other kind of like love is I love space, everything to do with space and the stars. And, you know, I think I'd probably, if I get to a point where I feel like I could retire, it would be fun to just spend a year like traveling around, like hunting UFOs and all of that kind of stuff.
My cup of tea as well. Can I join you on your hunt, please?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I guess, and the other thing as well is I remember a while ago, I was asked if I'd be interested in participating on this like TV show where they were like going around to America's most haunted places. And, you know, it totally wasn't going to work. But that kind of sounded really fun to me, even though my partner thought I was totally bonkers. Because I was like, when else am I going to travel to, you know, a whole bunch of haunted places in America? But I guess, I know that's not a great, very helpful answer. But I guess the thing is that for me, I'm kind of, all of those topics are, I explore them just because I'm interested in things outside of myself or outside of, you know, my understanding or my present understanding of reality and the experience that I'm having. Whenever I get like very stressed or very overwhelmed by the things that, the tasks that are at hand, I like to kind of meditate on, the fact that we're all just like floating on this giant rock in space, and so that I probably don't need to like be bashing myself up because, you know, I'm worried about the production on a music video, because at the end of the day there's like some weird kind of fish-like creature on Kepler 32b floating in some giant ocean planet that just like has no knowledge of my current stress. And I guess it's to try and kind of disassociate from that part of my creative artist LA life and just kind of think more about the bigger philosophical pictures.
Yeah.
And then I guess and another obscure gift that I would give is that when I was you know, living in Sydney and kind of super broke, like next level broke in the beginning, I used to love watching, when I was really depressed, I used to love watching Academy Award winning speeches.
I still like, do.
Yeah.
I watch so many of them.
And I love Shirley MacLaine. So there's my gift, to watch Shirley MacLaine winning an Oscar for Terms of Endearment. She gives such a great speech. And also I just kind of love it because she'd been nominated so many times for Oscars, and that then finally at that stage of her career she'd won. And I guess I related to that in the sense of my career was never necessarily like instant overnight. It definitely was like slow, like evolving, kind of feeling things out, trial and error. So, you know, my definition of success these days is like being hit by a train like over and over again and then just standing up and continuing to walk forward. You know, so that's how I think of it.
So Shirley MacLaine, which one? So the Oscars?
Yeah, she won for her Oscar-winning speech for Best Actress for Terms of Endearment.
I think it was 1984, wasn't it?
Yes, I believe so. Yeah, I was born.
That was when you were born?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. Cool. So so definitely check out Shirley MacLaine winning Best Actress of the Oscars in 1984. I mean, I always watch so many different speeches and stuff, and I love people's journeys. Like there's another podcast who interviews all these celebrities and stuff, and but they talk about all the moments that didn't work out for them until to the point where, like, I was listening to Tiffany Haddish, I think, and she made it in quotation marks in that 2017. But prior to this, she was doing comedian for about 20 years from 1997, I believe. And it was just, I mean, to listen to her, her story, and she was homeless for 3 years or something. It was just like, that's the things that I love. And it goes back to what is success, and going, and also goes back to zooming out and going, actually your problems, what you believe the problems are, actually very, very small compared to the grand scheme in life.
Yeah, absolutely. And kind of, you kind of really do have to take the, understand the mantra of like, that, you know, these things are extraordinary learning lessons. I don't want to say that bad things are meant to happen. I don't know if I'm quite on that page, but I do believe that it's definitely, they're extraordinary like learning opportunities. I mean, one of the kind of really intense experiences that I had when I first came to LA is like, you know, with a very big artist, I shot a whole $350,000 music video, and everybody, you know, was just like, this music video is so extraordinary. And I got signed to a very powerful agent off based off of it. And just before it was about to come out, a crazy fan of the artist had leaked into, had hacked into the post-production and leaked all this footage of it, and then it inevitably, the whole video got shelved. Well, and I was just completely shocked.
Why did the artist hack into the post-production?
Well, not the artist, a fan of the artist. Crazy fans, yeah.
Oh wow.
And so, you know, that I went from being like, oh my gosh, everybody's like, this is your moment, you've arrived, so all of a sudden I wasn't even allowed to show the work that I'd created.
So because it got, you know, didn't they think to just release it anyway though, rather than pan it?
For a whole variety of reasons that you know, I couldn't, you know. And so the stuff that I didn't necessarily agree with, but I understand and respect why.
Yeah.
So but that, you know, for me at the time, I was like quite like devastated, because I thought, oh wow, you know, this is my Hollywood moment, I've really made it now. Mm-hmm. And then it just kind of like imploded on itself. But then, you know, it's amazing, because then, you know, since then I did take the attitude of, you know, I'm going to rebuild. And now I've, you know, done a whole bunch of like extraordinary projects. And if anything, kind of last year was more about directing than it was about photography, which is really strange that it was going into that direction. And right now I'm finding that's what a lot of people are asking me to do. So I'm kind of just rolling with it, you know, and going, okay, you know, seeing, I did the most fun job for Netflix, channeling a whole bunch of drag queens playing various incarnations of Meryl Streep.
Yes.
And that was so much fun. And they did it as promo for The Prom.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, that new film with Nicole Kidman and Meryl Streep.
Ryan Murphy doing the directing and writing and stuff.
Yeah, and the whole thing was such a dream. And then even Ryan Murphy shared the video I made on his Instagram.
Oh, lovely.
I was just like, wow. You know, so again, I was like, that job was so much fun from beginning to end. And then also you just kind of, it's just, it's never that I think that I've made it. It's just more so you go, wow, like what is possible? Who's looking at your work? Similar experience. I directed a Christmas concert with Christina Aguilera, and that was just kind of amazing, because I remember looking behind the monitor and kind of looking to my left and my right, and I was like, I can't believe this is happening in my head, and just being like, also, this is really funny because I'm not just standing on somebody's set or like interning like I was in the early days. I'm like, I'm literally the director. Like, I'm the guy who's supposed to know what's happening.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, it's kind of those moments are where you have to be like grateful and grounded. And
of course.
And it's just, it's like I said, it's not a sign that it's all perfect by any means, because I still have my highs and my lows. It's just more that you're like, wow, what is possible? What I think is possible continues to expand. Mm. Now I'm like, could I make a feature film? You know, that's the question that I'm asking myself at the moment. You know, and maybe I'll move into that world next. So that's for me what my journey has been.
anything is possible. I've got a picture on the Zoom call with basically there's a girl with her head in the clouds, and I always like that. I mean, I always like the notion of keep your head in the clouds. Like anything is possible.
Yeah, absolutely. I noticed that picture too. I thought, oh, that's a great pic.
It just reminds me every time I go onto these Zoom calls, it's just like anything is possible because I speak to these amazing people, yourself included, who have done these amazing things. And I think the child of me, when I was 18, going, oh my God, who do I speak to now? What the things I do? It's amazing. It's like life is possible if you decide to make it possible.
Exactly, and kind of being open, and you know, I know that there's people who've definitely had it a lot harder than me, you know, but it's kind of the reason I say that is because it seems like a stretch for me to have come from Queensland and to go and to do all of these kind of interesting working with a lot of these kind of personalities seemed very, that's never going to happen ever, you know. But now I kind of, you know, I believe in manifestation in a healthy way. Like I watched Big Little Lies like everybody else and fell in love with Laura Dern in it. And then, you know, when I got asked to do Laura Dern for an L cover, it was just kind of fun because you just go, well, you kind of can't help but feel like you attract those kind of fun experiences. And a day like that was fun too, because like Laura Dern is just as fun and lovely as you would totally hope she would be. And so that kind of stuff is more, I feel like that it's not about a particular person or experience. It's more like manifesting. I think of it as more like a magnet, and you're just kind of slowly pulling something closer towards you. It doesn't necessarily have to be money, you know what I mean, or fame or any of those things. You know, and also you can have different experiences and discover that they're not for you on the other side of it too. Exactly. But that's kind of like the fun part of it all, isn't it?
That's the fun part of life. Well, I want to say thank you so, so much. I know our audience is going to come away with so much bite-sized goodies that we've been talking about today. So again, thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
No worries. And if you're listening, and I hope you are listening, please do rate us on Apple Podcasts and do check out our Instagram, which is 360_yourself. And please do come back and listen to more brilliant guests about how they 360 their life. This is 360 Yourself, and I'm Jamie Neal. Thank you very much for taking a moment to listen to our wonderful guests. Please subscribe to our podcast to access all our brilliant guest episodes. They are released every Sunday at 12 p.m. We are available on all listening platforms, Spotify, Pocket Cast, Overcast, Google Podcasts, and Castro. You can also find us on Instagram at 360_yourself, Twitter at yourself360, and our host at Jamie Neal JN. Thank you for listening.